on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of InvestTalk. It is October 28th, getting very close to the end of the month. And I appreciate 2015. I appreciate you being with me. Part of our job on InvestTalk is to offer encouragement. I know sometimes we can get a bit preachy, but you should think of it as encouragement, not preachy, because you're listening both to Justin and I, and I know that you're motivated to improve your money management skills. So, and we, Justin and I, always want to improve ours. It's not, you know, it's a constant learning curve because things change a lot. It's interesting. They change, yet they remain the same. But you have to constantly adjust your thinking as in the reality of the economics that you're in, or the earnings season, or whatever it's going on around. Like today, of course, we had the Fed with its announcement, and we're in an interest rate sensitive environment. Are we going to raise rates or not going to raise rates? You know, so there's always something going on that makes you have to look at what you're doing. And you know, this show is all about the basics of managing your money, trying to be well diversified. Now, the folks at Street.com put together the 10 commandments of personal finance, and I think they're worth repeating. And if you just focused on commandments 9 and 10, you'll be building a solid foundation for your investment life. Okay, so we're going to be talking about number 10, thou shalt take action. If your portfolio, I talk about looking at your portfolio at least once a year. Talk about readjusting it, rebalancing it. And you need to take some action to keep it in balance of what you're looking for. Are you looking for growth? Are you looking for income? Are you looking for protection? What are you looking for? Because your portfolio can get out of balance away from what you've set it up to do in the first place. So you have to look at it. Commandment number 9, thou shalt pay off credit card debt. If there's one thing I can teach you, and that is to get out of debt. You, at some point in your life, you have to be an interest collector, not an interest payer. Paying for credit card interest is a huge expense. Over time, it could kill you. You need to collect interest, dividend interest, bond yields. I don't care. You got to be on the other side of the fence at some point in your life. You switch. You don't be a borrower. And credit card debt is the worst. I don't have a problem with debt that buys assets. I don't. But credit card debt is not that. So sit down and work out a plan to pay off your credit card debt using the snow, you know, different methods. You don't have to start. You can start small to pay that off, but make it a priority. Now, all 10 of those commandments are worth repeating, but those are two of them. You'll find them again on thestreet.com. Maybe you'd like to share your approach to managing money. This is when I ask you to join us on the phone. We're ready for your call, of course, bringing your questions. 888-99-CHART. Bring them to me. I'd love to talk about it. 888-992-4278. And that's our 24-hour listener line.
This is Mike from San Diego. I listen to it every day, much as I can. My question is on mutual funds that have a lot of activity in Europe. What do you recommend to do now? Add to them currently, sell out as a whole, or just sit tight with what you've got? I have a few mutual funds that have a lot of European interest. I appreciate the comment. Thank you very much.
Well, okay, good question. First of all, decide how much European exposure do you want? I think you should have some. Because I think Europe has been beaten up pretty badly. And, you know, you always want to buy something that's on sale. And I think a lot of Europe is on sale. And I do think with the ECB and their QE, have you noticed their QE hasn't really worked yet? It has not. Not like ours. But the ECB, Draga, mentioned even this week that he's going to probably do more before the end of the year. He's going to try to do more to spark the EU economies. I don't know if I would bet against the ECB. Just like you don't want to bet against the Fed. You know, if the Fed wants to do something, they're going to do it. So I think you stick with it, but you got to decide how much you have and make sure that's how much you have. You'd say you want 10% exposure of your portfolio to Europe. That's how much you should have exposed to Europe. Now, mind you, the S&P 500, the R index with all those stocks on our stock exchange, a lot of their earnings come from Europe. I just read this morning that the EU, the European Union, the size of the economy of the EU is almost exactly the size of our economy, which is like $13 trillion a year. That's big. So you got three major axes in the world, and that's us when it comes to economies. That's us, the EU, and China. Three major. I'm not saying that there's not other important economies, because there are. But those are economies to watch. So decide what you want, how much you want, and then stay with it. That's my opinion. The case for a money market fund. Do you know what the difference between a money market fund and a money market account? So we're going to talk about that. That's going to be our main talking point today. Italy is the latest entrant to go into negative yield territory. If you borrow sovereign debt in Italy, you have to pay for it. Mention that. I think that's interesting. And how Mario Draghi will stop Janet Yellen from raising rates. We had the Fed announce today. They just had a meeting, two-day meeting, and they said, well, we're not going to raise rates. They were vague on what they were going to do in December, of course. But this, Draghi thinks that, not going to happen. Well, at least the opinion on this article thinks it's not going to happen. They're not going to raise rates, not while Draghi is on the opposite side. And the U.S. shale revolution, we didn't get to this yesterday. I promised to get to it today. I'm going to do it first thing today. The U.S. shale oil revolution is not dead yet. And I don't think it's going to die. But it's surprising. The numbers are surprising. I think sharing those will surprise you. Those are things we're going to talk about today. The market, did you see the market? It was very interesting. Market was up over 100, 110, 115, 120 points on the Dow. And then the news came out from the Fed. The market immediately fell into negative territory within 10, 15, 20 minutes. It was negative. Then it came roaring back after that, ending up the Dow up 198, the NASDAQ up 65, and the S&P up 24. It looks like to me that we're going to have our year-end rally and we're kind of in it. We're barely flat. We're almost flat, a little bit up for the year now, finally. And that's after that big fall in August and then a retest of that fall in late September. And now from early October on up, October is known to be one of the most volatile months. So far, that volatility has been on the upside, not the downside. Isn't that interesting? So one more thing before the end of the day, if I can get to it, is do you know what the best days of the market for the last 65 years? What best days, most often, what percentage move for the days? And I got the top 10 days of the year. Over the last 65 years, what days were the best for the market? You're going to be surprised, I think. I think you're going to be surprised. Because I kind of was. Of course, we know the seasonality in the last quarter of the year and the first quarter are better than the middle quarters. We know that. But we also know that there's usually a pullback sometimes starting in the summer, many times ending in September or October. We know that October has some of the worst market days in history. The Great Depression and then the 1987 crash all started in October. And if you look at in 2008, some of the worst days were in October when that financial crisis hit. So we all know those kinds of things, but what were the best days? Kind of interesting. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If the gap between your expectations and the reality of your investments is growing wider and wider, then it's time to reevaluate your portfolio. Investors should do this at least once a year. After significant life changes, you should, a marriage, kids, you should do it then. A job loss or a new job, you need to look at stuff. Each month I set aside a day or two to meet with people. I'll be in San Diego County in our La Jolla satellite office on December 2nd. And you can reserve your time by going to InvestTalk and clicking on Schedule a Meeting. Or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
Hello, this question is for Steve or Justin. I was hoping you'd give me your opinion on a symbol, T as in Tom, K Kite, R Robert. They've got an earning coming out tomorrow morning, and I bought some shares today. So if you can kindly give me your opinion, that'd be great. Thank you.
Had a good day because the earnings were better than expected, so the stock was up nicely today. A big, pretty good size move, up 6%, $1.82 on a share. The stock is $30.60 a share. The question is, who it is? TKR, everybody, Timken Company. They're out of North Canton, Ohio. Manufactures bearings, alloy, steel products, a precision components for automotive and industrial manufacturers. And their earnings and their sales have been kind of rough recently. Earnings are still pretty good, but they're down significantly from a few years ago, you know, $4 or $5 a share. Now they're going to make $2.13 this year and $2.39 next year, but they made $2.56 last year. See, so they've been kind of, you know, all over the place. Not a lot of debt. Pays a decent dividend. I don't think the dividend's at risk. Has very good cash flow. Management owes 10%. But the stock has been falling for some time now, from like April, March-April period, all the way to just till the end of September. And just now seems like it's starting to move up. So this is they're going to make $2.39. It's a $32 stock. So that means the PE is around, what, 13, 14? And that's a reasonable valuation, decent dividend, solid company with not a lot of debt. Now, you need to hope for a recovery in sales. And that's where the damage is. Recovery, the sales is, you know, is not that great. They're down 10% this year, this most recent quarter, down 8% the quarter before that, down 2% the quarter before that, up 2% the quarter before that. So it's just, you know, that's the problem you have. Good, solid company, and this may be where you want to be a buyer of it on if you feel that the economies are going to turn around. It's a $2.5 billion company. This does good. This will do much better with an expanding economy. That's what it will do. Saeed in Oakland. How you doing, Saeed?
Hi, good. Thank you very much, Steve. I have a question regarding Apple Computer.
Sure.
Okay. Today closed like around 119 and some change.
Yes.
And then I was asking you, is it still a good buyer? Because I read some reports say like Apple good days are over and some supply has problems. And I just want to know, is it still a good, is it going to go up or going to go down?
I think Apple's days are not over. I'm not sure why. You know, I've read a lot of negative numbers about Apple, but yet they beat expectations or met expectations, but beat on earnings and profitability. They have $200+ billion in the bank. The stock is pretty undervalued. Well, I think you want to be a buyer or owner of Apple at this stage. We own Apple in our managed accounts and have for some time, but it's just, you know, are the days over? I think that's way wrong, personally speaking. So I think it's a good time to buy, yeah, and be in it. Our InvestTalk number is 888-99-CHART. You can join us right now. I'm ready to answer your questions. I really like to hear about the mix in your retirement portfolio. Maybe I can offer some suggestions. I'm Steve Peasley, and this is InvestTalk.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. We've been lamenting the absence of volatility for years, and now we have some. So what do? Seizing the day. Value opportunities. That's our talking point for Thursday's podcast, and we hope you'll join us then.
Okay, what is the difference between a money market fund and a money market account? Okay, because most managed accounts out there, if you wanted to go to cash, you usually go to the money market fund. But it's not a money market account. A money market account is like a savings account that you go to a bank, you open an account, it pays interest, and sometimes you can issue checks, 3 checks a month. So, you know, sometimes they have those restrictions. And that's what a money market account is. It's at a bank, and you actually get interest. It's very small interest. But a money market fund is a mutual fund. A money market fund is a mutual fund. Now, of course, both of them, money market account and money market funds, do the same thing as far as what they own, which is usually very short-term, safe instruments that pay interest, okay? And a money market fund has a net asset value of a dollar, so it appears to you as it's just cash. When the only reason why it is a dollar is because the company who offers that money market fund keeps it at a dollar. And if it falls below a dollar, they'll make up the difference. But not always. Not always. Almost always. But not always. So a money market fund is a mutual fund that has a net asset value of a dollar. Okay? And it pays you interest based on what they own, and that produces income. Usually they own very short-term, very safe type of instruments. So it's a pretty safe investment. But a money market fund is at a bank, and it's a savings account, type of savings accounts that you might be able to issue checks on. So don't confuse the two. They're different. They're very different. But I think a lot of people think that a money market fund is a money market account. But it's not as safe. It does not have the FDIC insurance. But an overall account, a investment account, does have SIPC insurance, SIPC. It gets more complex. I can keep talking about this forever and get deeper and deeper and deeper in it. But I just want to make sure you understand that there is differences. A money market fund can break the dollar per share if the underlying company who's offering the money market fund goes bankrupt. They can not be a dollar share. So it's just very unusual. I think only one has ever done that, and that was due to the financial crisis. So just be aware. That's all. That's all I want you to do. Be aware. Matter of fact, if you notice that's a lot of times I say that. I mean, I just want you to understand how these things work and what they are, and just gather more and more knowledge of what you're doing. And then pretty soon you'll be pretty knowledgeable, and you can talk with the best of them, and you can understand when someone's trying to blow smoke at you. Because there's a lot of those people out there. Okay? 888-99-CHART. Let's go talk to David in San Jose. How you doing, David?
Hey, Steve.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Sorry, I got a bad connection here. I was calling about Yemen Gold. The ticker is AUY.
Okay.
I wanted to see what you thought about them today because they were doing well. It looked like they were kind of ticking back up. They had a really good day, and then the Fed news came, and gold just kind of tanked.
Okay.
I wanted to see what you think the outlook for them is, and I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay. This is Yamana Gold, AUY, a Canadian company engaged in the mining and exploration of gold and silver properties in South America. Gold was up big at the early in the morning. So all these stocks, not just this one, all the gold stocks were doing well. And then after the Fed meeting came out and the Fed saying they're not raising interest rates, most of the gold stocks took a hit. And this one did too. I mean, not anything dramatic. It wasn't like a collapse or anything. It was down, you know, it's a $2.47 stock, and it was down about 2 cents, or a little, about 1%, a little less than 1%. And that would be typical for the gold stocks. But I think you're looking at a turnaround in gold. If you look at gold in the recent weeks, it looks like it has put in a pretty good bottom. And that bottom, you know, happened in August and then retested in September, just like the overall market. but has been trying to recover. I think we might be seeing a rally here in gold because I don't think the dollar, remember, I think some of the fear is that, okay, they didn't raise interest rate this quarter, but they're going to raise it in December, and maybe people fear that that's what's going to happen. I frankly don't think they are. I don't think the Fed's going to raise rates. I don't think they can. But the fear of it is always on a day-to-day basis. I don't think you exit your Yamana just because of today's action. It's very volatile action in gold today. But I don't think you don't take this one day and say, okay, I need to exit. No, don't think so. I think I would hold on to it. It looks like it's put in a bottom. It tested that bottom, and it looks like it's higher highs and higher lows ever since August. So I think you want to stay with it while it's doing that. We've reached the halfway mark in the hour, everybody. You help shape this program. You can shape the next half hour with your questions. What do you want to talk about? You can get through to the phone right now. If you're a podcast listener, we are here live every weekday afternoon from 4 to 5. So that's specific time. So you can call during that hour if you want to be live. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Invest Talk for Wednesday, October 28th. Those credit card offers sound pretty good. Zero interest on balance transfer. But what about those transfer fees? Can you negotiate them? Or what's your question? The line is open at 888-99-CHART.
I was just scanning through some charts just now and something struck me. I started with Apple, okay? Just scanning through the charts and scanning through the fundamentals. And Apple's going to make $10.82 a share and the stock is $119 a share. So it's going to make $10, it's almost $11 a share and it's a $119 stock. Then I said, well, what is Disney? I'm just curious. Well, Disney's going to make $5.60 a share and they're at $114. That's what their share price is. They're going to make half of what Apple is, and it's the same price per share. So, okay, well, what's Netflix? I'm just flipping through. Netflix is going to make 26 cents a share, and their stock is $105. So Netflix is going to make 25 cents. Disney's going to make $5.60 a share, and Apple's going to make almost $11 a share, and they're all trading about the same stock price, $105 to $115 a share. Did you see the valuations there? Now, earlier Carl said, do you think Apple is something I should buy or hold or whatever? As far as valuations, there's not even a question about that. Not even, even if you look at the growth, Netflix is not growing faster than Apple. And Netflix is a $45 billion company, and Apple's what? A $200 billion company, a $680 billion company, and they're growing 20-25%, same as Netflix. You see the valuations there? Now, the big issue, and why is that so? You're going to say, well, why doesn't everybody just buy Apple? Because it's all about the future. People think that maybe Netflix has a lot better growth prospects in the future than Apple. People are worried about Apple and most of their income is coming out of the iPhone. And what if the iPhone is not popular anymore? I say to that, you need to take a closer look. But anyway, I don't want to get into that. I'm just saying, look at the valuations. You know, the market is crazy sometimes about what it values and how, why. Okay, just quickly. What is the best, in the last 65 days, what are the best 10 days of the year for the stock market in the last 65 years? What do you think it is? I'm going to give it to you. It's October 28th. October 28th. Today. Do you see the market today? Dow was up 198. What's the next best day? November 24th. Then October 20th. Then December 26th, then November 26th, and then September 16th, and December 16. Notice that there's 3 days in December that are in this top 10, and the last one is April 1st. Kind of an outlier there. I just thought that was a funny, interesting statistic. Why is October have the first and third best days? Probably because October is known for being volatile. That would be my guess. Don't save your questions. If you have a question that is about the basics, we're here for you. Whether you're an experienced investor or beginner, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. This is Karen from New Jersey, and I have a Social Security question. What I don't understand is spousal benefits when you're supposed to file and suspend, and then the spouse takes early benefits. Does that work when the couple is the same age and has similar income? Thanks a lot.
Yes, it works.
Bye.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it works great that way because you're both turned 66. One of you, file and suspend, and the other, well, you might have to both suspend. See, this is I'm not an expert on Social Security, so I've got to be careful when I answer. But what I understand is you can file and suspend, but I believe one of the spouses can collect spousal benefits. And that's all based on your partner's Social Security benefits. You're collecting spousal benefits on theirs, not your own when you file and suspend, but on theirs. And really, I think you can, and this is a great question for a Social Security expert to help answer you this question. Because a lot of money is being left on the table. So I think you can do that. So please check into it if you're at that age. But, you know, I know it works for if your spouse, you turn 66 and your spouse is 3 years younger than you. Well, you can file suspend at 66. Then that person can then file for spousal benefits. Now, when's the best time to file for spousal benefits? I don't know. But it gets complex. There's so many different rules. It gets very complex. I read a book on it, and I tried to. I had an expert on the show about it. So, you know, I think it's something that we all have to start paying attention to when you get close to that age that you're going to start collecting Social Security. You really need to check into spousal benefits. Okay. Time for Invest Talk 101: A lesson in everyday investing. This is something you should do at least once a year. I've mentioned it many, many, many times, a portfolio checkup. One of the most important reasons to go through the trouble of this, to measure your performance and take a look at your holdings and what's working and what's not. You need to understand why. If your portfolio was assembled without a plan some time ago, then this job becomes much more complicated. You may need help. You know, for somebody like myself, if you have a plan, it may get out of sync with what your goals were as time goes by. What if your plan was, I'm going to own these, you know, 12 ETFs in different parts of the market, but over the next year, one of the or two of those 12 really did really well, and one or two did really, really poor. So now your goal was to have this balanced portfolio, and now it's out of balance. And that's when you start to rebalance it. And what that means is you would sell off some of your really part of your ones that your ETFs that have done very, very well and add to the ones that have done poorly. And doesn't that feel wrong? But it isn't. You're trying to sell high and buy low. You're not trying to buy high. Many people will take a look at their winners and say, I'm going to add to those winners and I'm going to sell my losers. Well, if it's an ETF, that means it's a grouping of stocks or sector stocks or different indexes, and they rotate all the time. Who takes the lead and who doesn't? Depends on the economy. There's a pretty reliable pattern of that rotation. So, you know, you want to construct a portfolio that is diversified and balanced, and you want to keep it that way. So take a look at it. And that's Invest Talk 101. If there's a question you'd like me to explore, send me a note. Go to investtalk.com and hit the button that says Contact Steve.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial. An InvestTalk insider is someone who enjoys instant access to webinars about useful topics and updated lists of dividend-paying ETFs, just to name two. You'll probably discover your favorite reason, too. Join up now. Just go to InvestTalk.com and scroll down to Sign Up for Free to become an InvestTalk insider.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to James in New York City. How you doing, James? Or at least New York.
I'm good. How are you tonight?
Good. I don't know if you're in New York, but you're at least in New York. New York City, but you're at least in New York.
Yeah. Yes, I'm in Manhattan, absolutely.
Okay. How you doing?
I'm well, thanks. I wanted to ask about ticker symbol BX, Blackstone Group. In particularly, I read an article not long ago about how BX is supposed to acquire something called MB Aerospace, and this deal is supposed to conclude at the end of this year. I was wondering what a situation like that, what would that mean if that is executed? What would that mean for the price of the stock? I bought it at about $32.80 not long ago. I was wondering if a deal like that, how would that impact the price of the stock?
Okay. They announced that deal on October 26th. They're going to buy MB Aerospace, engine component manufacturer business, from Arlington Capital Partners. And we're talking about Blackstone Group. BX is the symbol. Provides global alternative asset management and financial advisory services. Now, they do this fairly frequently, buy companies, and then a few years later, they spin them off or go public with them again. What it will do to stock, remember, it already is built into the price of the stock because they announced it on the 26th and here is the 28th. So 2 days ago is when they announced it, and didn't affect the stock hardly at all. I mean, it didn't do anything to the stock. So now you got to figure out, well, how big is this deal to buy aerospace? Remember, Blackstone is a $20 company, $20 billion company. So how big is MB Aerospace? Is it is the deal $1 billion, $10 billion in relationship to the overall size of Blackstone? Is it just a small part of it? And that's kind of things that you would want to look at. How big is this deal? And then is this company, is it making money? Is it losing money? What were the reasons that they bought it? So that's really what you look at. Always, Blackstone is a very well-managed money market firm. Okay, they're pretty smart people. They are one of the smartest out there as far as buying and selling companies and other assets. So I don't think it's a negative. I really don't. For Blackstone, I don't know enough about MB Aerospace to know how positive it will be or if there will be any problems. Do they buy it with debt? Do they buy it with cash? Blackstone doesn't have any debt, very little. So, that kind of thing. So, James, I can't really answer your question without doing some investigation on MB Aerospace to see if it's a net positive for them. Appreciate the question, though. Thanks for listening. It's a podcast listener in New York. I really appreciate that. I do appreciate all my podcast listeners, and I want to thank you all for listening. 888-99-CHART, the U.S. shale oil revolution isn't dead. This is a surprising article to me. You know, we all know about the shale oil revolution, and it has made the U.S. the largest producer of oil in the world. We surpassed Saudi Arabia and Russia. We are the world's largest producer in 2014 of the oil in the world. A lot of that credit has to go to the explosive growth in shale production. Now, we also know that rig count, drilling for new shale oil, is really down, 70%, hugely down. But what's happening, and we also know that exploring for shale oil and drilling for it is very expensive. So when the oil prices collapsed, the assumption was, well, then all the shale oil companies are going to go bankrupt because they also used a lot of debt. And we're talking junk debt to produce all that oil. And what's really happening is the best producers are continuing to grow. They're not shrinking. They're learning how to get more oil at less cost from the same wells they've already drilled. It's really interesting. It goes to the ingenuity of these people, I think. They're able to, the same well that, you know, expires quickly because the first year of drilling a shale oil hole, it's usually when they get most of the oil out that first year. Well, they've figured out ways to extend that life cycle. Pretty impressive. So everybody thought the shale oil, had to survive on $70, $80, $90 a barrel, and here they are surviving at $50 a barrel. So I think that is impressive. And it's telling me that oil, one of the reasons, we're still way oversupplied in oil. The whole world is. But I don't think the shale oil companies are doing all that bad. Doing better than expected. And it's going to continue to keep us, meaning the U.S., as probably one of the top, if not the top, producer in the world. Isn't that interesting? People think that we're not the top producer. We produce a ton of oil. We could, if we really wanted to, with the right politics, become oil independent. We don't have to buy oil from anybody. We could, but, politics always gets in the way of these things. So, but even with politics getting in the way, you're seeing shale oil producers growing nicely. Okay, so you can't fault them. Very interesting. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Just so you know, Italy has now is one of the other countries in the EU that interest rates are below zero. You have to pay to borrow their sovereign debt. And you have to pay 0.023% to buy. In other words, Italy's selling debt, like the U.S. selling U.S. Treasury bonds. But in Italy, you don't get interest. You have to pay them to buy the bonds. Now, that's also true in several other countries. It's not just Italy. You got Germany and you got, who else? I read them today. Switzerland, Germany, France, whose borrowing have rates have turned negative. So there's other countries. There's a lot of, And the ECB, Draga, I'm going to talk about him a little bit. But he's pushing hard, and he's going to try some other stimulus besides QE. And this is what's happened is QE has driven these interest rates down like this, their quantitative easing program. Okay, and that's not going to stop because so far those economies haven't really gotten some traction. So they're probably going to do something else. We thank all of you for having voted for our straw poll. You have set the topic for our upcoming November 18th webinar, Building a Strong Portfolio with Less Risk and Finding Strong Dividend-Paying Stocks. That's what we're going to do. You can sign up for it right now. Sign up will begin soon. Well, you can sign up pretty soon, not yet. Now it's time to ask your questions about any money topic. 888-99-CHART.
Most professionals will tell you it's a good idea to review your retirement accounts, your whole portfolio, at least once a year. Steve can help a limited number of our listeners with this task. If you're not near our California offices, Steve can meet with you via Skype or telephone. It's easy. If you'd like to set up a time, just go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting.
888-992-4278. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, as you know. But if you have a question between programs, you can still ask, and we'll play it on the next InvestTalk. We're here for you all the time at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. I have a question about Target, TGT. I don't own the stock, but I think about buying it. Just want to know your thoughts. Thank you.
Well, right now, Target Corporation, TGT, operates 1,800 Target super Target stores and cities Target stores in the U.S. If you haven't been to a Target, I don't know where you've been, but they're everywhere, right? They're going to make $4.72 this year after making $4.67 last year. Next year, they're going to make $5.15 a share. Pretty decent, 3-5% growth. Nothing tremendous about the company, but a very solid company paying 2.9% dividend. It's neither cheap nor is it expensive. it's a $76 stock going to earn $5.50. So that's right around 15 PE. What is the average PE? Well, in the last 5 years, the range was 11 to 17. So that's about where it's going to be. You buy this stock because it's a good, solid company paying a decent dividend. That's why. You don't buy it for the growth because there isn't any. And you hope to buy it on a low price. And I think it's a fairly decent price now. It's not in a recession, this stock will hit a bottom. I mean, in the 2008-2009 recession, it got as low as 25. So it will go down in a recession. But right now, it looks decent. It's growing slowly and doing well. That's about all you can say about it. It's not going to be exciting, but it pays a 2.9% dividend. I think there's other stocks that pay better dividends that are more excited about the dividend. But TGT, Target. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Mario Draga, he is the ECB, European Central Bank President. Okay, he's the one that implemented the EU quantitative easing program where they buy, I don't know, was it 60 billion euros worth of bonds a month? And why Italy and Germany and all those others where their sovereign debt is below zero. You have to borrow, you have to pay them for them to lend you money. It just seems wrong, does it not? Well, the ECB and Mario Draghi are really kind of controlling what our Fed is doing. If you sit back and think about it, remember the EU is about as big as our economy. Their economy is as big as our economy. Okay, so right now they're pressing hard with this QE, trying to spark their economy. And he threatened earlier this week that they're going to do some more stuff if this does not work. And it's not been working very well, this QE. So if he's going to do more, wouldn't that drive the euro, their money, down in relationship to our money? And our money has already risen sharply against other currencies, and this has really hurt our exports in the last year. And that's one of the reasons the S&P 500 earnings this quarter looking pretty weak. So can our Federal Reserve, who kind of wants to raise rates, can they raise rates in the face of other countries pushing their currencies down in value? Because it's not just the EU. China's doing it too. And even this morning, I think I read Japan is considering by year end to do some kind of not necessarily quantitative easing, but something to spur their growth. Everybody else in the world is on the opposite side of us. So until these countries start tightening their money, tighten the monetary system, which would then be more in line with what we're doing, until that happens, I'm not sure how the Fed can raise interest rates. Think about the damage it would do the economy. And remember, the Fed doesn't want to damage the economy. Now, they talk about it all the time. They talked about it. Well, we might raise, you know, they said they were going to raise interest rates this year. They only have one more meeting left. And this meeting that they just announced today said, They left it kind of vague still. I think that's on purpose. It's vague, and don't do anything. Maybe they shouldn't do anything. I don't think they should. Our hour's up. I'm glad you joined us. A reminder of my new checkup date in the San Diego area. I'll be in La Jolla on December 2nd. You can reserve your hour by going to investtalk.com, clicking on schedule a meeting. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. For Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial, thanks for listening, and we'll hope you join us again on the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor.
For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.